All right, good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day morning, and with it being Wednesday, it is time for Greenside Up. And joining us on the phone from the K-State Extension offices is Jesse Gilmore. And Jesse, good morning. How you doing, man? Let's try that again. Jesse, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay, I didn't have the button punched up, so I'm doing pretty good. So we were talking off air what your main subject is going to be today, and it's what to do with your Christmas tree after the holidays are over.
Yeah, so live Christmas trees have kind of fallen out of favor in to more artificial Christmas trees. They're easier to keep. You know, you can use them for multiple years. But there is still a decent number of people that use live Christmas trees. And so today's topic is going to be about what to do with them once the holiday season is over and you need to find an alternative use for them. A lot of municipalities, I'm not particularly sure about the details in our region, but in the state of Kansas, will take Christmas trees curbside after the holidays. It will vary from city to city. So you should definitely check with your city's trash service to see if they will take your trees. Oftentimes when cities do take trees, they will either burn them as firewood or chip them up and use it as mulch for their parks and rec department. If you don't have a tree disposal or you for some reason miss the date, there are some other alternative uses for Christmas trees. The first is to use them as a cover for birds who need cover from predatory birds or cats. They're a good option to use as cover around bird feeders. Sometimes people will just lean them up against the deck and scatter some seed on the deck. Sometimes they'll tie it to a deciduous tree until the Christmas tree completely dries out and dies. And sometimes they will just leave them out against a wall to use as cover. Now, obviously, because the tree is drying out, you're not going to be able to use it as cover for the entire season. But it will provide a little extra cover for them. It is also possible for pine trees or fir or spruce, whatever species you're using as your Christmas tree, to serve as habitat for fish in ponds. So if you've got a pond that's stocked with fish, you can sink the tree into the pond, and it will serve as a habitat for smaller minnows and larger fish all the same. It will also serve as a substrate for aquatic plants. So it will increase the fauna of your pond as well. To sink it, you would just tie a rope to a cinder block and to the base of the tree and just toss it in. Typically, pine tree or Christmas trees will be small enough to where they will sink given the extra weight of the cinder block. You might need to tie two down. It kind of depends on the size of the tree. Do you have any questions about that so far? Because I have some other options too.
Keep going. I mean, definitely keeping track of this because, like you said, unfortunately, live Christmas trees have kind of fallen out of favor for artificial because, like you said, they're easier to take care of. But to me, there's still something pretty special about those live Christmas trees, especially when you... If you get them pretty fresh, that smell they put in the house, it's the kind of that piney smell or whatever the smell is from a tree, that to me is still kind of special.
Yep, and that is, I think, one of my favorite parts of using live Christmas trees. I haven't done it in a while, but getting that piney smell throughout the house definitely helps. But that's a good segue into using pines as firewood. Obviously, once the entire tree dries out, you can chop it up and use it as firewood. The thing to be careful with most conifer species, is that they will have little pockets of resin or sap inside the trunk that will spark or basically create mini explosions when heated. That can be fun when using it as firewood, but it's also something to be careful with if you have young kids who like to get close to the fire. It is something to keep in mind. They will spark and pop much more than deciduous firewood will. So that's something to be careful of if you do decide to use it as firewood, which I think is probably the most common post-holiday use for trees that are live trees. There was one other. Oh, yeah. Shoot. Now I can't remember what the last one I was going to say. Oh, yeah. So obviously, you want people select trees for the length of life when cutting a tree out of a Christmas tree farm. If you are interested in getting the longest use out of your tree, you're going to want the bigger and heavier trees because they're going to hold more moisture. The smaller trees, while they will be easier to dispose of and have alternative uses for, will have less moisture in them, and so they won't keep as long. So you do have a couple of options if you've already gotten your tree for next year, or if you haven't gotten your tree yet for this year, to both have the smaller tree and extend the length of life for that tree during the holiday season. The first is to cut the tree closer to the holiday season. The longer you have the Christmas tree in the house, the more chance it has to lose moisture. If you want the smaller tree because it's easier to manage, cutting it closer to the holidays is the first step. The second step is to keep the tree away from heat sources. So heating vents, fireplaces, wood-burning stoves, moving them away from those heat sources will decrease the rate of evaporative loss from the trunk. The third is to stand the tree up in a pan of water, not necessarily cold water, but cooler water. If you do this, the first thing you need to do when you get the tree home and into the area that you want to keep it is to make another cut about an inch above where the cut was made at the Christmas tree farm, because the resin will harden at the base first, and it will plug up the tissue that conducts water upward to the rest of the tree. So giving it a cut about an inch above the first cut will open that tissue back up and allow the water to flow upwards once again and extend the life of the tree.
All right, so good ways to take care of your trees. So be sure to is that information? Can that information be found on the K-State Extension website?
Not right now, but if people call me with any questions, I can easily answer those using research from other universities. Obviously, we don't have a ton of pine trees in our state. We are the only state without a native pine tree in the country, and I think that speaks to our rapidly changing weather conditions that pines don't do very well here. The only native evergreen we actually have is the eastern red cedar, which I'm sure some people are groaning at on the other side of the radio, because eastern red cedars, especially if you're a crop producer, are very weedy trees. And they're not very wanted. Eastern red cedars are great trees if you need a hedgerow or some kind of shelter, like windbreak. They are amazing trees. But if you're growing crops, they are a nuisance at the best of times and an outright plague at the worst of times. So pine trees definitely need a lot of love if you're going to keep them in the house and then use them outside. And we've got a lot of good info on pines, firs, and spruces, which are the three main species of, families of trees that are used as holiday trees.
All right. And Jesse, before we get out of here for this segment, of course, we won't be talking to you again until after Christmas. What are your Christmas plans for the next couple days?
I am driving back up to the Kansas City area to spend time with family. not a ton of huge plans. I have finally been asked to bring a dish to Christmas dinner.
There we go.
On my own for the first time. That's a new experience. And hopefully I can live up to expectations for the rest of my family, because they are very good cooks.
Well, hey, they're wanting you to, they're finally saying, all right, it's now your turn to start bringing some food. So me, I would probably just run by the store and get a pumpkin pie and say, here you go. Because I cannot cook, let's put it that way. I've tried to make a meatloaf and I can't even do that correct. So, all right, Jesse. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on today. We really do appreciate it. And again, be safe heading up there to Kansas City, and you have a very Merry Christmas, man.
Thank you. You have a Merry Christmas, too.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break. On the other side of the break, we're going to have Wendy Powell from the K-State Extension offices. You're listening to the mighty 690 KGGF. And welcome back to Greenside Up right here on the mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. And now joining us on the phone is Wendy Powell. And Wendy, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Kyle?
I'm doing pretty good today, a couple days before Christmas, so definitely excited about that. A few things that you did want to go over before we get to your main subject. You do have a couple of meeting of announcements coming up, correct?
Yes, we do. Tara Solomon-Smith, one of our family consumer science agents, is doing a Powerful Tools for Caregivers virtual class. This class is going to cover tools on reducing stress, communicating, caring for the caregiver, reducing guilt, anger, and depression, relaxing techniques, making tough decisions, a whole host of cool things. And participants also get a caregiver help book. So lots of different cool things in this class. It is on Thursdays from 1:30 to 3:00. And I'm not really sure if that's on Facebook or not, but there is going to be a $5 cost. So anybody can register for that class by calling our office at 620-724-8233. And, of course, there's going to be information on this Powerful Tools for Caregivers class on our Facebook page. So if you want to check that out before calling the office, you certainly can do that.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay, great. On January 23rd, we are going to have an ag lease and ag law meeting. That's going to be offered virtually, and we're hoping to have an in-person component for those that might have internet inaccessibility. So that's going to cover our results of the pasture and crop lease surveys that we've been working on. So if folks have not yet answered that lease survey, there's still time. We'll be taking answers on that survey, or those two surveys, through January 11th. Then we'll summarize those in the next week and present that result January 23rd. So that should be a really great meeting talking about pasture and crop leasing, the contracts and ins and outs of that. And then we're also going to get Roger McGowan from Washburn University to visit with us about ag laws, fencing, and all the fun things that go with that. So that will be a really incredibly informative meeting, and it should be pretty lighthearted as well, even though these are some tough topics. So we're looking forward to that. And information on that will be going out today. And if anybody wants to sign up for that, they can call the LeBec County office at 620-784-5337. Lots of good meetings coming up that will answer lots of questions. And those mostly will be recorded, at least the Ag Lease and Ag Law. So we're hoping to do some watch parties and things like that after these meetings happen for those that can't connect at those times.
All right. So those meetings coming up, and you can find, I'm assuming you can find more information about that on Facebook and website, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, both Facebook and website, or if anybody just wants to chat, they can call our offices and get their questions answered.
All right. So we got a few things that you did want to talk about. We touched on this topic last week, but again, talking about lease surveys.
Yes. So we've got a pasture survey and a crop lease survey out right now. It's available for folks to take part in. So essentially what that, there's lots of different questions about what kind of crops you're growing or what kind of forage growing, and then information on rates that you're paying, different types of fencing. We just kind of want to get a look at what is going on here in our four counties, Wilson, Montgomery, Libet, and Crawford counties, so that we know whenever people call us, we can give a more concise answer about what's going on in their particular area. There's lots of different surveys, statewide as well as nationally with this type of thing, but they're not well participated in, so we're hoping that we can just kind of narrow down the questions and narrow down who that is distributed to. So if you are leasing a pasture or any cropland, I encourage you to take part in the survey. Completely anonymous. There's no identifying questions. And all of it, of course, is online, but we are offering mailed copies of the survey to anyone that might be interested in receiving the hard copy and then mailing it back to our office. So just give us a call at Libet County for that. That number again is 620-784-5337.
All right, and the main topic, one of the main topics you wanted to bring up this weekend, it's not, you know, it's maybe something I never even thought about, but cattle facial recognition, not something that I've really thought about when it comes to working with animals.
Yeah, so this is something that K-State has partnered with some industry leaders on over the past year. So 2020 certainly did not slow research down, but cattle facial recognition is something that has been an idea for a few years now, and I've seen lots of different TV shows where they can put a picture of some bad guy or someone that they're looking for and then run through all of these airport pictures, and they can say, oops, that's him. So, you know, really the idea just extrapolated from that. Whenever you look at a pen full of cattle that all look the same, they're all solid black, they're all the same size, how do you tell them apart? Well, I know that there's lots of different producers that just have a memory for that type of thing. There's just subtle differences in those faces that can really differentiate those animals. So a computer system has now been created for this type of thing. And essentially it's an app. I got on their website yesterday to take a look at some of their information, and you just kind of take a little video of a calf's head, and it's just like well, I have small children. It's just like the Pampers app where you scan the rewards number. You just kind of get up their clothes, and then the phone just takes a picture and it uploads it to this database. And as the database grows, then there's going to be more animals to choose from, and that software is going to get even more accurate. So what's the point of all of this, other than just being really cool? This program, it's free. The app is free to download. It's not quite available yet, but after the first of the year, that should be opening up. And this is going to serve as a free, voluntary, there's no mandates to use this program, for disease traceability. So we know that COVID-19 has really brought out contact tracing, and everybody is probably familiar with that system in the human population. We've been dealing with contact tracing in the animal industry for a number of years due to several different communicable diseases. Whenever we can track an animal from where it has been, what ranch it came from, or what marketing facilities it might have gone through, we can work backwards on keeping the rest of the herd safe, as well as our product in the grocery store. So this product is going to take a picture of the animal that you scan with your phone, and then essentially tag the time and date and location. That's all it does, is those three things: the picture of the animal, the time, and the location. And then that just sticks with that animal. So if it gets scanned again into the system, then all of that history will pull up. So an animal can be scanned into a system at any age. So you don't have to, you know, scan them in as newborns and then lose all of that information. If you are working with stalkers or cow-calf pairs, you're buying some bred heifers, you can scan them into your database at any point in that animal's lifetime. And then that information will stay with them. But Kyle, I tell you what I'm most excited about with this. On the website, they talk about how this can be expanded for other records to be kept with that animal. Vaccination records, breeding records, production records, things like this. So really, whenever we as humans are talking about enrolling in school and all the different things that go with that, we have to have our vaccination records, and we have to share that information. So animals are the same way. Preconditioned animals, animals that have had these vaccinations, are worth more because they've been cared for a little bit more. You know, they've had vaccinations for blackleg. They're less likely to get that disease, things like that. So this app essentially is going to bring us the opportunity to put this information in. And whenever you, let's say, sell that animal at a livestock market, someone buys it and puts that heifer into their herd, they'll be able to pull the information up and say, oh, you know, this heifer was blacklegged on this date, and I don't have to worry about that anymore. So I am just so incredibly excited about this record-keeping and record-sharing opportunity that it, I think it's really going to change our industry.
Well, absolutely.
We'll be able...
Absolutely, absolutely, because it'll be more accurate record keeping and record sharing.
Yes. Yeah, so it's going to just be phenomenal. I'm so excited about it.
All right. So, again, something I never thought about, but it just goes to show you, like you were saying, that, you know, even though things have kind of slowed down a little bit this year because of COVID-19, that progress has not slowed down. And basically technology to help out cattle farmers with this technology, it's just absolutely, like you said, you're excited about it. It is absolutely amazing that we've been able to do this. And like I was also saying, that, you know, this does help with, you know, accurate record keeping, accurate record sharing. And it's just, it's a very big step forward, is it not?
Yes, it really is.
All right. So, again, with that cattle facial recognition, we'll have, if you missed any of that from Wendy, we'll have it up on our website. We'll have the interview up on our website. So if you missed anything Wendy said, you'll be able to hear it there. Wendy, if anybody does have any more questions about those particular items or anything else, how can they get a hold of you?
You can reach me at the LeBec County Extension Office. That number is 620-784-5337. Then also you can find me, I'm very responsive to email as well, Wendy, W-E-N-D-I-E, Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L, at ksu.edu.
All right, Wendy. Well, thank you again so much for today, for all of that information. And before I do let you go, any big Christmas plans?
I am looking forward to spending some time with my family and doing some crafts with my kids.
All right, and that's going to be a lot. I'll be able to take some time off and kind of relax and just have a good time with the family. But again, Wendy, since I won't be speaking to you again until after Christmas, I hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too, Kyle.
All right. Thank you, Wendy. You have a great day. Alrighty, that was Wendy Powell from the K-State Extension offices. Like she said, you can catch her at the LeBec County K-State Extension offices. And if you missed any of the interview with her, we will definitely have that up on our website a little bit later on, so you can check out the meetings that are coming up, also stuff about lease surveys, and also cattle facial recognition. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break, but when we come back, we're going to start Open Line. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day morning, currently 55 degrees. It is 8:24 here in Southeast Kansas.